Blog Talk Radio.
Now it's time for some mind, body, and soul food with host Tanya Parker.
One, two, here I go.
Well, I'm a hungry woman. Feed me like I want to be fed. Yeah, I'm a hungry woman.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Mind, Body, and Soul Food. I'm your host, Tanya Parker, here to dish up some deliciously delectable consciousness-raising creations for your mind, body, and soul. I would like to thank the absolutely fabulous Gay Adegbolola, who brought us in with her Hungry Woman Blues. We like to think that we have the cure for Hungry Woman and Hungry Man Blues on this show. We're on first and second Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We serve up a big dish on natural and holistic healing to feed your mind, body, and soul. Now, let me share with you a little bit about myself. Spirit has called me to work within my practice and ministry, Mind, Body, and Spirit Works, to facilitate expression of one's highest self through divinely inspired and assisted holistic healing, teaching, coaching, and writing services. And my holistic table has served up a lot of different offerings over the past few decades. I'm aging myself, I know. One of which is Mind, Body, and Soul Food, which has provided an opportunity each month to feed our listeners with mind, body, and soul nourishing information as we give voice to the vision of truly gifted holistic healers and light workers. I would like to thank you all who called in and listened last month for our new format where we started going twice a month. You tuned in and some of you heard Reverend Anthony Farmer share about his latest book, Conversations with the Elders, The Sacred Journeys, Volume 2, and he passed on wisdom from the elders and some other spiritual drop-ins for our callers. And also, the second Sunday, we had Dr. Craig Wright to return to provide numerology forecasts for 2014 for those who called in. And so I'd like to thank them so much for being present. Again, they are frequent flyers on this show, and also for those who listened and called in. So tonight we have another milestone. We are going international with a guest hailing all the way from the United Kingdom, the UK. He has written a new book, The Art of Baby Making, and he certainly is a subject matter expert with a claim to fame of helping over 1,000 women get pregnant. So without further ado, I'd like to extend a warm mind, body, and soul food welcome to Jared Kite. Welcome, Jared.
Thank you very much, Tanya. Very happy to be here.
It's great to have you. What a claim to fame, huh?
it's the exact figure we don't know. A lot of patients have come along and they disappear, and years later I get a photograph of a baby. So I haven't actually got the exact figure, but yes, it's a very press-worthy statistic. That the first one ever came out was, we all got pregnant by the same man, and it had a picture of five women on the front cover. So the press certainly like these kind of stories.
I would say so. I certainly had a lot of fun marketing this show. And I have to tell you, I got feedback from one particular woman who said, this is very poorly written. I was thinking something else until I read a little further. I said, well, I wrote exactly what I desired to write. I'm sorry you didn't see the humor in it. But, you know, folks who don't know, if you could share who you are and what do you serve at your healing table, because there is a reason for the pregnancy of all of these women.
Yeah, well, my background is I spent my 20s actually in San Francisco, and I went out there to work in the travel business. And while I was there, I was introduced into acupuncture as a means of stress relieving. And my very first session was particularly powerful, and the next day I woke up feeling radically different. And very quickly, there was a succession of coincidences, and I ended up moving back to the UK to study as a psychotherapist, something I would never have dreamt of doing. I mean, in fact, at that point in my life, you know, my goal was to be a successful businessman, make a lot of money, and live a very nice life in California. So it was a massive turnaround that I really wasn't aware of at the time. It's really only in retrospect that I see how quick a change it was on the back of that first treatment. So even though I didn't choose to become an acupuncturist at that point, it definitely sparked an interest in how we function as human beings. And psychotherapy was my route. And then from that, I then became an acupuncturist. And then as part of my practice, there was this strange thing that a lot of patients that were coming for lots of different reasons started getting pregnant when they thought they couldn't. And as I say, it's a kind of the zeitgeisty symptom, it seems, at the moment, particularly in women's health, that from what I've been told by editors, if they can put something to do with fertility or pregnancy on the front cover, it increases circulation greatly. So suddenly it was picked up as a very of-the-moment thing. There was a way to get pregnant beyond the traditional means and the new event of IVF, really, as it was at that time.
Right. And for those who may not be familiar with the lingo, IVF is in vitro fertilization. So
right.
When you were initially working with acupuncture, you weren't dealing, per se, with fertility issues. That was not your purpose at the time.
No, not at all. My primary interest, having lived in San Francisco, was treating people with HIV and AIDS. And when I came out of college here in the UK, I applied to get a grant, a research grant, but also a residency at the local hospital. And at this time in the UK, there was no one practicing acupuncture funded by the National Health Service. So I managed to get this contract, and it was the first acupuncture clinic actually helping people. And they were particularly interested in the style of acupuncture that I was doing, because at that time, this was before the drugs were available, there was very little they could do for patients. So that was my primary focus at the time, was to work with essentially terminally ill patients. And then I had a small private practice, which was much more much less significant than what I was doing in the hospital. And it was there that suddenly this kind of reputation gathered momentum of me helping people get pregnant. But as I say, when they came for treatments, they weren't actually coming to get pregnant. These were women who were coming for things like hay fever, back pain, stress stuff. And the side effect was that not only did their symptoms go away, but also suddenly they were all conceiving. There were three women in a row that all knew each other, all in their 40s, all who had children previously and had tried for another one and couldn't conceive, and so assumed it wasn't possible. So very quickly there was this interest, you know, how is it that going along for this treatment that wasn't about fertility could actually increase your fertility? So it was
incredible.
It was very contrary to the way that most of us think in the West, that you go along with a problem, you have a specific treatment for that problem, and hopefully you get that outcome. And this is the exact opposite.
Okay. And I have to tell you, I'm a big fan of acupuncture. I've been receiving it, I guess, for the last 6 years or so for a variety
right.
of issues. And very much like the women who came to your practice, they weren't coming for fertility issues, but they found that was dealt with or addressed through the acupuncture. I have found the same to be true. I may present with a particular ailment or concern, and I find that it has impacted other areas of my health and well-being as well.
Yeah.
So wonderful.
I mean, it wasn't at the time. It wasn't a surprise for me, because I clearly understood that my job was not to treat symptoms, but to help a person find the correct balance within their system. and then any part of the physical and mental functioning is then corrected by that process if it's done properly. But I should add, you know, there are lots of different styles of acupuncture, and some styles are more focused on treating symptoms directly, and the five element system that I work with is much more focused on looking at the underlying weaknesses within the system, which when corrected will then help everything come back to balance and then cure symptoms. So there are different strategies and different focuses.
Got you. And we'll be talking a little bit more about your five element style. But I have a question for you. You know, you say that, you know, a lot of the press really focuses on fertility issues right now. Why do you believe that fertility rates are at an all-time low in the Western world?
The first obvious one is that women are, as a general trend, having children later. Whether being older means that you are less fertile, I think, is questionable. My experience is that the thing about being older is that it's just that you have more responsibilities, you are more exhausted through life in general, there are greater pressures on women than ever, and men. So I think that there are kind of circumstantial causes. How much we can put it down to environmental things, toxicity in foods or whatever, I couldn't really comment. But from my experience, it seems that the people that I see generally are overtired, stressed, a lot of them very unhappy and don't even realize it, not really doing what they want to do, and very caught up in a system which keeps people running in a way that they may not really want to if they only knew. And I think often the problem with fertility is one of those boxes that needs to be ticked. And it's part of this kind of vision that once we have everything in place, then we'll be happy. So I think that's partly the problem, is that it's a cultural thing and a thing of our times, where we believe more than ever that the carrot is just beyond. And if we just keep going, we'll get there. Whereas in the past, I think people just accepted that getting pregnant, having children was a very natural, normal thing, and it just happens without even thinking about it.
Right, right. There's a lot of thinking about it, a lot of time, energy, and resources put into it. I know a dear friend of mine just recently became pregnant after trying for years and years and years, and just seeing the heartbreak that she went through. And I do know others, family members and friends, who've tried for years and have not been successful. So I know that it causes a great deal of stress within the woman and the man, because you address men's issues as well.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, these are generalizations I'm saying, but it feels very different. The impact it has on men is very different to women. I think with women, it is very much about this is the next thing they're going to do in their life. It feels in some ways vocational. It's something very instinctive, very emotional. With men, I notice there's a lot of pride in it. There's a lot of the story. The story is that I'm a man and I will have children and my line will carry forward. It's that kind of primitive thing of keeping the family line going. So it hits men and women in very different ways. Having said that, we're all human, and we all like to be part of a pack. And I think it's just a massive shock and disappointment when you think you're not going to have your own pack.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole area, and this is what's been interesting when people say about, oh, you work in fertility. I don't even think of it as being working in fertility. It really is working with all the issues that are kicked up as a result of someone having difficulties with fertility. Because most of the time that I'm with patients, we're not talking about fertility. We're talking about all of the thoughts and feelings and ideas that people have that get thrown into chaos when something that they expect to happen doesn't.
Right.
So that's what keeps my interest in it. Because, I mean, if I'm frank about it, it's not really my business whether people have children or not. It's not a desire I have for them. What I'm interested in is helping people be authentic, enjoy their own life, And if part of that is to have children, then that's a fantastic bonus. Mm. But what's fascinating about this area is that a lot of people come for treatment that may never have even thought about coming for a treatment that addresses the fundamental needs of who they are. And so it's a very, very interesting area to work in. I mean, for example, when I was working in California, the culture of the people that I was seeing there is that they were coming for treatment with a lot of goodwill, a lot of understanding about personal development, about trying to enhance their general life situation and to use acupuncture for that. So they almost came with the correct mindset straight away. With the fertility patients I see, for the clear majority, these are people that would not normally think of going for acupuncture. And they're certainly not people that would think about going for therapy or for any kind of self-improvement. So it's a really fascinating opportunity to be with people and for them to suddenly realize that this apparently tragic situation suddenly has all these amazing benefits and opportunities.
Well, you know, fertility is a big business. It is a big issue. It's more than business, that's for sure. It impacts people at such a deep level. And there has been this one-size-fits-all approach that the mainstream has been aware of when it comes to dealing with infertility issues. And it's interesting because I don't want to call it infertility issues. I want to call it fertility issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. That's just my mindset. Are you an infertility specialist or a fertility specialist? Well, you want to bring about fertility, or the issues are around fertility or bringing that forth, producing that. So I want to say fertility issues. But anyway, whether it's one way or another, there's this one-size-fits-all approach. And what is the downfall of that?
First of all, the main problem is that people assume that the fact they can't conceive and have a child, that is the problem. And so it's put in a box. And this term unexplained infertility that has become common parlance now, it's almost like a diagnosis that means something. Of course, it doesn't mean anything. So people come along and they say, I've been diagnosed with unexplained infertility. I've been diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome, and it's almost laughable because it doesn't say anything, it doesn't help anyone. It rather conveniently sends people off with something rather than nothing. Sorry, can you repeat the main part of that question again?
No, I was just asking about the downfall of that approach, that one-size-fits-all.
Oh, the one-size-fits-all, that's it, yeah. So typically what happens, and also what's happened in this country, and I know it's true in the States, is then what people do is they focus on the fact that someone cannot get pregnant, and there is a direct focus on what is perceived as being wrong, which normally is something to do with the actual biology of it, maybe the stress around it somewhat. But it's certainly not seen in a very holistic way. It's certainly not seen that there could be many, many factors that are causing this problem. And for that reason, it feels like an absolute mystery to most medics. And the only thing they can offer is in vitro fertilization or other supportive treatments for infertility. Mm-hmm. So in my experience, and I suppose because I'm an acupuncturist and have been an acupuncturist for a long time, the majority of people that came to me at the beginning had already tried everything else. And so they were arriving at my door desperate and prepared to try anything. And so at that point, they were open to looking at, well, the reason they're not conceiving could come from almost anywhere, from stuff in their past, stuff going on with their work, their relationship. And so suddenly the whole picture opens up. So an idea that you can just say, well, this person's unexplained infertility, and now this is the treatment we offer, and that's it, just does not work. And we know that because the results for IVF are still very, very low in spite of the very, very clever and advanced medical technology and understanding.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about you know, not really focusing on treating fertility per se. You're treating a larger issue, and then fertility can result. And you speak of, in your book, the Chinese notion of not treating something to treat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be pretty fascinating. And, you know, you talked something about, you made this comparison to maintaining a house that I liked so much. If you could explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, the idea of not treating something to treat it, it emphasizes the importance of stepping back and looking at the whole picture and understanding that everything is interconnected. And this was very important for the ancient Chinese in their understanding of life. And if we think back to an ancient culture, or even cultures now that aren't so modernized, the relationship with nature and the changes in nature were essential to understand health and well-being. So people, when they're coming in for treatment, they sit there and they give you their main complaints of what they want help for, and then they tell you all the other symptoms that they have. So you make a note of that, but then it's important to step back and say, okay, so this is what's showing as a problem, but now we need to look at what actually is the real problem. So the analogy that I use in the book is of a house where you see there's absolute chaos, the whole place is breaking down, but then it's to work out, well, where did this all start? So, for example, you could have just one tile that is broken in the roof, where there's a slow drip, and that creates damp in a room. The family move out of that room. There's then conflict within the family. Meanwhile, there's more damp going through, creating other problems. Another part of the house breaks down. And so for a person coming from the outside looking in, what they see is relative chaos. And then it's very hard to isolate what actually was the cause. So you're doing the same thing with a patient when they come in. You make a note of all the different things that are going wrong, and fertility issues are often just one of those things. But they could also have headaches, they might have relationship problems, they might have a problem with bullying at work. You make a note of all of that, but then you're looking at, okay, but what was the original thing that created the problem for this person? The idea is that when someone is balanced and well, we can recover from almost anything. It doesn't matter what is thrown at us, it's part of life, but we can come back from it. However, if there is a weakness in the system and it's not addressed, and this continually feeds through to every other aspect of life, that's when you start to see problems that are very, very difficult to treat or get rid of, even in the firefighting kind of approach where you're taking individual symptoms and dealing with them. And that's the beauty of the five-element model, is the practitioner has the capacity to see what the cause is by how the person is. And that cause is completely separate to the symptoms that are presented.
Before you go into the five-element model, I just want to pause and invite callers to call in. The number is 917-889-7806. If you have a question for acupuncturist, fertility specialist, author of The Art of Baby Making, Jared Kite. Again, that's 917-889-7806. Make sure you follow the instructions to speak with the host so that I will know that you are in the queue to speak with our guest. So the five-element model that you were speaking of, if you could, I know it's very complex. When I went to massage school, I remember it boggled my mind for a while, and still am not the greatest at trying to explain it, but if you could try to, for the layperson, talk about it a bit and how you take it into account when treating someone dealing with fertility.
Okay. Well, the five-element model that the Chinese describe and worked with was really their understanding of nature. So they looked at the world around them, and in particular, they were very aware of the seasons, and they were aware of the atmosphere of each season and what each season produced. And what they noticed, that there was a natural cycle that was the same every year. So although things changed somewhat each year, there was a consistency in the cycle of the seasons. And what they saw was that what was produced from each season, which they then called the elements, these five elements were essentially the nature of everything in life. So what they then looked at and said, well, if this is happening outside, the same thing must be happening inside of us. So they looked outside and they saw that the season winter represented the water element. It was the time when the rains came, when the water settled deep within the ground, and it was a quiet, still time. But they noticed in spring that things started to grow, so that was seen as the wood element. This was a time of new beginnings, of creation, dynamic movement coming from stillness. Then following from this, they saw the summer emerged. And summer, they felt the heat and the opening and the warmth of the season, which was the fire element. Moving on from that, we come into the earth element, which is the season of late summer. And the reason they have five seasons is because the harvest season was seen as so significant for survival purposes, they actually saw that as a separate season. So you had summer, then late summer, the earth element, and then moving down to autumn, and they saw this as the time where nature really discarded all the extra aspects of life that weren't needed and left the pure quality of the whole cycle. And this was then seen as the metal element. So metal meaning the treasures that the creative cycle of the whole year produced. So this was the five-element model they saw externally, and then they said, okay, if this is how nature works externally, this must also be working inside us internally. And then very cleverly, they worked out how each element within us was represented by two organs. So, for example, the water element is represented by the kidneys and the bladder. So within the human body, the kidneys and the bladder are responsible for the containment and the distribution of fluids, ensuring that our body has the movement and fluidity and moisture that it needs for its functions. And then taking another example is, say, the earth element, represented by the stomach and the spleen. So the earth element, which was the harvest season, the way that we bring in the harvest, the same way that we as human beings bring in food, bring in ideas, bring in information into us and turn it into something useful so we can function. So it sounds kind of strange to think of these elements within us, but they weren't really talking about the elements per se, but the dynamics and the energetics of these elements and how they manifested in our body. And they also saw that this natural cycle that maintains life externally therefore must work within us. So really, the system of medicine simply says, if the elements within us are mirroring the elements in nature and working as nature ordained, we are well. And sometimes things go wrong, just like in nature they go wrong, but we also know is that nature always corrects them in time. So no matter what happens externally, somehow at some point it is corrected. And that same intelligence and mechanism operates inside us. And that essentially is the system of medicine. It's very simple, almost too simple for most people's thinking, because what we tend to believe is that if something goes wrong with us, it's gone wrong independently and has to be dealt with independently. Whereas the Chinese understood that if you didn't plant your seeds in the spring, you wouldn't have a harvest in late summer. And so equally in the body, if the liver, for example, is not detoxifying the body appropriately, you will not be nourished with the blood to the muscles. So they looked at the exact same process externally and internally and understood the importance that all of the organs have to work efficiently because they all look after each other and they're all responsible for each other, just like a community or a family. And it's interesting that in Western medicine, we do the opposite. You know, we actually have different consultants working with different parts of the body when it goes wrong. Some patients are seeing five different people when the cause is probably one thing. Even to the point where, I'm not sure how it is in the States, that we actually have complete different buildings for different aspects of our health. So we very much have this idea of separating things out in the West and looking at things in isolation and working in isolation and not acknowledging the oneness and wholeness of creation, nature, and us being part of it.
Yes. And
how was that?
That was beautiful, actually.
You
really broke it down, and I realized it sounded so simple the way you explained it, and how brilliant of them to discover this.
Yeah.
Because it really does make a lot of sense.
But then to turn it into a system of medicine where they actually understood how they could support and manipulate in a positive way each of the organs through the meridian pathways. But the most brilliant thing about it of all is how they understood that when nature is in trouble, it sends out a distress signal. And that is the most profound part of the medicine, is that the body, as soon as the cause occurs, sends out a signal that if you're tuned into it, you can know what's going to happen to someone in 5, 10, 15 years' time. Because nature tells you immediately that something has started going wrong, even though you may not see any symptoms for years after that.
Mm-hmm.
And unexplained infertility or fertility, it's a similar thing. There's nothing wrong with the person. It's a weird one. It's an absence of something. And what it's, in a way, it's saying is the absence of this person's body to create new life is telling us there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And often patients come and they say, well, I've been told there's nothing wrong with me. And yet, logically, if somebody is not conceiving and they're having regular sex, there must be something wrong. But we're very quick to dismiss it unless we can see it tangibly and say, okay, there's the problem. And often patients are that, you know, they're told to go away because their symptoms aren't bad enough yet, or they're given antidepressants, antibiotics, things to suppress things. Basically, we come back when you're properly sick.
That's
so
Western
very,
medicine.
Very
yes.
It's a very, very different way of looking health. And what's also really fascinating is to remember the whole natural homeostatic intelligence of the body, that we are hardwired, designed to repair ourselves and to work properly in spite of all kinds of problems. So when something does go wrong, it needs to be taken very seriously.
Yes. And, you know, as I've been telling people about your book, I've been saying, you know, this is really a great book, and it really does transcend the whole issue with fertility and infertility. There's something in it for everyone. It's about health.
Yeah. I mean, this is the reason it was written. I mean, I'm not a writer. I didn't set out to write a book or books. It started out as a compilation of case studies, because patients were coming in and I would start explaining a little bit about the approach, and people were quite skeptical and couldn't really understand how all these issues or matters could affect their fertility. And so I started compiling case studies, which I could then say, well, maybe you'd like to read these case studies and maybe you'll relate to this in some way. And you'll see the kind of linear story of how this person came in and what they realized and what they changed and the outcome, which was a pregnancy. So it started out like that, and then it started to be filled in with some of the theory. And it really was written to give people hope, because I really was at the beginning dealing with the hopeless. These are people that have been told it was highly unlikely they were going to get pregnant. They'd often failed 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times at in vitro fertilization. They had remortgaged their homes. They had completely stripped down their life just to hopefully become parents. And so it's a very desperate and often a very private, painful process. It's not something that people often talk about, a lot of people. And so and there's very little out there for people to read about these things. I mean, people read about the success stories, and people get excited about the new medical treatments. But there's very little for people that have technically failed, if we can call it that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have a caller from the 301 area code, and so we would like to hear from the caller.
Do
you have a question?
There you go.
Hello, caller. Are you there? From the 301 area code, are you there? You're live on the air. Okay. Well, that caller, I heard them say something for a moment.
Yeah.
But maybe they will call back. But in the meantime, when you speak of Chinese medicine, there's so many different aspects of it. I was interested in hearing about the law of midday, midnight. And so if
right.
you could just explain that, how does that impact fertility?
Yeah, the law of midday, midnight is similar to the understanding of the seasons, but it looks at the 24-hour period that we call one day and one night. And what the Chinese observed is that the body follows the natural cycle of the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun, and that there is an appropriate and correct time for our body to function at its optimum. So what they worked out is that over a 24-hour period, the 12 primary organs and functions of the body each had a two-hour slot where they had more energy than at any other time of the day. And conversely, the opposite side of the clock, or it's called the Chinese clock, those two organs would have the low point of the day. So it's very interesting, and it's such a common sense thing, really, but most of us do ignore it. Give you an example, at 3 a.m., the lungs are given the surge of energy. And this is the idea that at 3 a.m. we begin up the waking process. That's from 3 till 5, and then from 5 till 7, the energy then surges into the large intestine, and this is the optimum time for having a bowel movement. And this is a really interesting one in our culture now, where people have terrible bowel problems, constipation, people are taking medication for it all over the place, and very few people understand that if they actually sat, I'm going to be graphic now, sat on the toilet between 5 a.m. and 7 a.m., their body is actually more able to pass a stool than any other time. So this is something very, very basic about how the human body works, and it's something that we ignore daily for most of us. The next example is from 7 a.m. till 9 a.m. is the time the stomach has most energy, and that's when the optimum time to eat breakfast. All the great cultures tell us to, you know, breakfast like a king or queen, lunch like a prince or princess, and supper like a pauper. The reason being, stomach.
I haven't heard that.
Nine.
I love that.
You haven't?
No.
There is in most cultures, they do say eating a big breakfast is the best thing you can do for yourself.
Yes.
And
yes.
The idea is that because the body has its optimum energy time between 7 and 9, it means that the stomach is best able to digest almost anything. So the idea is that you eat all three food groups, you eat a hearty breakfast, and that gives the body the fuel it needs for the rest of the day. And there is that idea that you're eating more at the beginning, less as the day goes on, and very little in the evening. I mean, a big part of, you know, people's eating patterns and problems with weight is that they're eating very little or nothing in the morning, a bit more at lunchtime, and then a big meal in the evening. Completely counter to the Chinese clock. And basically, the other one that's really interesting is the from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., which is the opposite side of the clock from the stomach, that's the time the stomach rests, and that's the time when we eat our biggest meal. So it shows that we're really abusing the natural cycle within the body. And we're putting our organs under huge strain by giving them jobs to do when they don't really want to do it.
Uh-huh.
So it's a lot of it is common sense, but it is amazing how when people start actually changing their habits or changing their lifestyle so it actually fits appropriately with the Chinese clock, it makes a dramatic change to their health. And so many people are taking supplements and vitamins and I'm very conscious of what they eat, and yet they're not actually eating at the right time in tune with the Chinese clock, which means a lot of the goodness that they're actually putting in their mouth isn't being assimilated properly because the timing is wrong. So it's quite when you look at the whole and you look at how all the organs have their peak time, you can actually get a picture of exactly, really, ideally, how you would function on a day and nightly basis. And then the idea is that once you're doing that and you have the strength and the support of nature in your daily cycle, then there's room to abuse it every now and then, because people just want to go back. But it's amazing how putting these fundamentals in place, particularly with fertility. I mean, one of the things that people forget about fertility is it takes a lot of energy to make a baby. Starting from the maturation of the eggs, having the energy to have sex, having the hormones balanced properly, to conceiving, creating the blood to sustain the pregnancy, and so on. It takes a massive amount of energy. And yet people approach it feeling absolutely exhausted, still doing far, far more than they should be doing, really, if they want to have a baby. So it is important to do everything you can to bring energy in and to conserve it. And that's what the Chinese clock teaches us. It says, you know, be asleep by 11 p.m. Get up in the morning and have a bowel movement. Eat a big breakfast. And these are all talking about how we bring energy into the body and how it's then transformed into a usable substance to make new life.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
A lot of sense.
I've done it for years now, and it is amazing how the odd times I don't do it, how different I feel. I mean, something as simple as being asleep by 11 o'clock makes an enormous difference. And yet a lot of us just forget about that, or we just do one last email or whatever late at night. And because this idea of it being a clock, if you miss your time slot, you've missed it. You can't fudge it. I mean, we know that when we get jet lag. I know when I go to California, I feel completely out of sorts for ages. And some people say, oh, no, I don't get jet lag. I mean, it's not possible not to get jet lag.
Yeah, how does that happen?
Yeah, but but that's what I mean. I think people have learned how to not be in touch with what their body is doing, how to override tiredness with things like coffee or other substances. There's lots of ways that people will cheat the system, you know, which is okay as long as they understand what they're doing. But unfortunately, a lot of it is done in ignorance. And a lot of people are unaware that their body is talking to them and trying to tell them what it needs a lot of the time. And it does that by giving us symptoms. This is another one. I mean, symptoms are wonderful, friendly messengers that tell us something's going wrong. And yet we treat them like enemies. We treat them like these terrible things that have come to curse us. And yet they're our friends. They're there saying, will you listen to me and will you do what I need you to do?
Well, I love that reframe of symptoms. You know, I started my career as a psychotherapist as well. And so, you know, we have to practice the art of the reframe there. And I absolutely adore that.
I mean, at the moment, there's a huge campaign about cancer, and the strategy they're taking is we've got to beat cancer, and then there's on the adverts on TV, there's these big, scary, blobby-like things called cancer coming to get us. I really don't see how helpful that is in getting the right attitude to health. You know, it is part of being a human being, and part of life is being sick. And it's something that we don't have to be frightened of, and we don't have to necessarily eliminate immediately. We're not perfect beings, and we're all doing the best we can, and symptoms are there to gently nudge us back into place. The problem is with big symptoms like cancer or for people who can't get pregnant. I mean, this is as big for some people as people diagnosed with cancer. Is that we don't listen to what we're being told by our bodies, and not in a judgmental way or a negative way. Often if you listen to what it's saying, it's offering an opportunity to shift or change in a way that could radically change every area of your life. And I've seen this over and over again with patients that they come in, they think there's nothing wrong with them, they start having the treatment, they start making some changes. And suddenly their whole life shifts, not necessarily dramatically, but shifts to a slightly better place in all ways, and then they get pregnant. I don't think I can remember a case study or a patient I've had where they've come, they've felt no difference, they've changed nothing, and then they get pregnant.
Gotcha.
And these are people that
there's always been some shift that's happened.
There's always something. It doesn't have to be massive. Sometimes it is. Just every area is just notched slightly over the line into a more wellness place, and then it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
well, I want to pause.
Sorry, yes.
Well, I just wanted to pause for a moment to give callers another opportunity, a last chance to call in if they would like to speak with Jarrett Kite, the author of The Art of Baby Making. The call-in number is 917-889-7806. Make sure you follow the prompts to speak with the host, and we would be glad to take your call. So I interrupted you. If you could go ahead and continue, I'm sorry.
Do you know, I can't remember now, actually. It wasn't that important. I mean, it's something I'm quite passionate about is this idea that the symptoms, these horrible things, we have to just get rid of as quickly as possible. And it's the opportunities that they bring are enormous, I think, if you can find out what the message is. And I think this is the difficult part for people. They really can't see why a debilitating symptom can be useful for them. And that's where I think you need someone who's helping you or who's able to see you objectively and to be able to make a diagnosis from what they experience.
Yes. We're going to pause right now to take a caller from the 202 area code. That's Washington, D.C. Caller, you are live on the air on Mind, Body, and Soul Food. What's your name?
My Mayana Gray.
I'm sorry, I missed your name.
Mayana Gray.
Oh, Mayana, hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
You have a question for Jarrett Kite?
Yes, I do. I was recently diagnosed with PCOS, and I was wondering how the Chinese clock may help that.
Well, going back to what I was saying about symptoms, PCOS does just tell us that the system hormonally is struggling in some way. The hormonal system, just like all of the body's systems, have a relationship with each other. And the hormonal system, the endocrine system in particular, is a very fluid system and is one that can be affected very easily by changes within the body. So going back to the Chinese clock, the great thing about the Chinese clock is that it gives a very nice even flow within the system. So it means that things feel very easy, really. There's a sense of ease within you, and you'll notice that everything else works better, like your digestive process, your thought process. So really, to go back to the Chinese clock, all you have to do if you want to look at my website, you can see it's on there. It'll explain the breakdown and the things that you should be doing at certain times of the day to work with that. And if you do that for a few months so that your body gets used to it, you'll find that everything internally starts to regulate. One of the most important things for the endocrine system is that we're not tired or stressed, because it is a very fluid system and affected by many, many different glands in the body. Rest is essential, and hydration is essential. Hydration is a big one, too. People think they drink enough water, but often they're not vigilant of whether they're sitting in an overly heated room, whether they're exercising and losing fluids, drinking things like tea and coffee that are diuretic, so you lose fluids. So making sure that you're properly hydrated at all times is very, very important for PCOS, and rest to make sure that you have enough energy.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mayana. All right. And so you mentioned your website, and let's go ahead and stop right now so folks can know how to find out more information. What is your website?
It's www.jarrettkite, all one word, that's GERADKITE.com.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
And if you go on to, there's a section on the five elements and the Chinese clock. And it gives you a very basic idea of the different activities or the lifestyle choices within a 24-hour period that will help reset the clock.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll definitely have to go on there and find out more information because I'm really fascinated by that whole concept. You know,
I have to tell you, go ahead.
Sorry,
I was just going to say that the best place to find actually is in the book. There's the whole chapter on it explains in detail what's happening in every two-hour period. And I think that's more helpful than just looking at the clock and the diagram.
Gotcha. And actually, I have the book in hand, and I have been enjoying that. Something I noticed about the book, it made me smile, because on Mind, Body, and Soul Food, we certainly focus a lot on holistic healing. And another theme that tends to run through our show is the woo-woo.
you were just queen of the woo-woo.
And so I have to smile when I think that, you know, think of you being in San Francisco. And I'm like, oh, no wonder the book is so woo-woo. You know, he was out in California for a while. But, you use terms. You speak of intention, being in the moment, faith, all of these very woo-woo concepts. And so how do these play into baby making?
If we're looking at people in the West and saying, well, why are these people not getting pregnant? It doesn't really make sense if we're going to believe that we have everything we need, which is what we're told. I mean, the majority of people that I see do live in houses with heating and air conditioning. They do have food on their plate. They do have a bed to sleep in. You know, they have good lives generally. I'm not dealing with people, you know, who are desperate. So it doesn't really make sense they're not getting pregnant. So it does beg the question, why? What is going on? Why is something as basic as making a baby not happening? And in the absence of any great wisdom from science, we have to look somewhere else. Now, if you go down the woo-woo track, when I'm looking at patients, the thing that I am overwhelmingly struck by is a deep underlying unrest in them. Even if they come in and say, I have a great life, I had a great childhood, everything's fine, I just want to have a baby. The truth is, when you scratch the surface, most people, very quickly, they expose what they're really feeling. And the theme is often one of, I have all this stuff, but it doesn't really quite deliver. But if I get pregnant, then I'll be okay. But there is a sense that in the present moment, there is a real restlessness, a sadness, a frustration, lots of very uncomfortable feelings. That the belief is that once they get pregnant, that feeling will go away. And from my experience, of course, that isn't true. Because even people that have a baby are back about a year later saying, now I want the second one. And the same feelings are there as intense as the first one. And then to the point where once I have the second one, there it is again. So from 25 years experience of working with people, what I am aware is that unless you address the kind of woo-woo issues, they don't actually get better. And they might get pregnant without fully addressing it. But that really, for me, is what I'm most interested in because that's where I see people really in pain and really struggling. And what's really lovely about this process is the people that do look at themselves from the more kind of spiritual woo-woo way, that even if they don't have a child, it doesn't matter. And that's the most important thing. Ultimately, it really shouldn't matter. I mean, it's a blessing if you have a child. It's a wonderful thing. I'm not saying it's not. But if you don't, does that mean your life is any less than anyone else? And I think unless you have some real understanding of the truth within, of who you are, and to be completely at peace with that, nothing is going to deliver. And that's really why I really emphasize this idea of faith and being in the moment. Really, it's about taking time to really have an understanding of who you really are and do you really need anything.
Got you.
And what the Chinese, their focus was very much on about accepting your place in the universe. They understood that they were part of nature and that life was a gift that had been given to them. There wasn't that sense of entitlement that we seem to have these days. a culture very much promotes this feeling that we somehow should have all these things, and if we don't, something's gone wrong. So the humility that the Chinese system approached life was very different. People were very grateful for whatever came their way, and definitely a child was a blessing. So the focus was very much about having a connection with nature, with the universe, recognizing that we are all one. And acupuncture is rooted in the Taoist philosophy, and the Taoist philosophy simply says there is this thing called the Tao, which is oneness, that we all come from the same source. This idea of separation and division is a complete illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And that the celebration of the oneness is through the unity of humanity and nature, the way that we come together, we love each other, and as a result of that, children are born. But it's not the starting point. And often what we do is we take the child to the starting point. We say, okay, if we have a baby, then we'll feel at one, then everything will be okay. The Chinese understood it was the other way around. You make a firm and strong connection with the oneness of the universe, with the oneness of all of humanity, and out of that, and essentially what they were talking about was love, come the children. And the children are the celebration, the manifestation of the oneness. So it is very woo-woo, but it's a strong argument if you really step back and think about how we operate and how unhappy so many people are, and in spite of all the stuff we have and all the things we think we want, and we get them and we still feel disheartened, sad, there has to be some truth in it.
Yes.
It's putting it into a book like this. I mean, people that are buying this book are not generally looking for self-help books. They're not looking for some kind of spiritual awakening. They probably never even thought about it. So it's a bit of a Trojan horse in a way. I'm kind of inviting people to consider a different way of getting pregnant. But I try to be very gentle with the approach because for some people these concepts are quite threatening. And also they're seen as being completely irrelevant to the outcome they're looking for.
Yes.
So the way I've introduced them and the way I've used the case studies really is mirroring my experience of working with people, and also it kind of shows my own progression, my own understanding through working with people. And pretty much everything I've learned is through my patients and observing what happens when people do find themselves, feel at peace, and to be in their presence, what an honor that is, and what an education it is. For me, to then pass on to the next patient.
Well,
in some ways, you know, for me, if I'm going to talk about, you know, which are my most successful patients, there probably are the patients where they haven't been successful in having a child, but are absolutely delighted to be who they are, to enjoy the fact they exist, and to live their lives in a way that feels right for them.
And
that's,
I think,
an amazing outcome.
That's an amazing outcome, and I think that would be a great takeaway for those who are reading the book, The Art of Baby Making by Jared Kite. I really want to thank you again for joining us this evening. The time just zipped away. If you could remind us again of your website so folks can know how to find out more information, how to order your book, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's www.jaredkite.com. The book's available on Amazon.com. The book was originally published by Chimera Publishing, which is an Apple book. So it is in three formats. My preferred version is the Apple iBook. It includes films. It has patient testimonials, so you see them on film. It has the house analogy, a film of that, and the elements. So it's a very rich experience. The reason it was produced as an iBook originally was the idea that the people that aren't able to come to me for treatment could have a similar experience that my patients have by coming into the treatment room.
Gotcha.
Acupuncture needles are only one way of facilitating a balance. I mean, we can do it without. And the idea is that if you can somehow experience what some of these patients have experienced by coming to me and my colleagues for treatment, I believe it can be a fertility-enhancing experience in itself. So that's a version on Apple iBooks, and then also if you prefer the good old-fashioned hard copy book, that is on Amazon, or the Kindle version as well.
Okay. All right. Well, our time is just about up. We will be back again on Valentine's Day, 6 p.m., for love and relationship readings from Tori C. and Coach Wilma Lee. Thanks for tuning in to Mind, Body, and Soul Food. Thank you so much as well, Jared.
Thank you.